Good morning, everybody. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:03 a.m. on Wednesday, June 10th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Christman. So we do have a quorum. My opening comments would be we are back in the Capitol. We've been conducting hearings and our commission meetings, work sessions, et cetera, remotely. So it is good to be back in the Capitol and get back into the old routine, if you will. But it's good seeing people making their way back in and making a move toward a more normal environment. I think we were incredibly effective as a result of the efforts of so many different staff members, Executive Director Steve Call, Matt, and you know, you always get into trouble because I could literally list the entire staff from top to bottom, but it takes a lot of additional work and effort. The logistics of conducting business remotely does take more time, frankly, because it's a different pattern, but I thought it went exceptionally well. We conducted business. There were not delays as a result, and we kept things rolling. So thank you to my colleagues as well. I just think it went extremely well, and I was really proud of the work that everyone did. So Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Brian. It's great to be back here sitting about 3 feet apart from each of my colleagues, but also conducting business in person we learned a lot of things during the quarantine experience. One of which was that technology isn't really a great replacement for in-person interactions. It can work, and it does work, and thank God it worked as well as it did, thanks to our awesome IT folks like Matt Kluzak and the rest of the team and Jack helping out with all the legal measures needed to make it happen. So we got a lot of work done during the quarantine process, and not to pat our own backs, but we were recognized nationally by some of our the NARUC organization, which is our national organization of utility regulators, for being on the front end and the leading edge of doing the all of our work, conducting all our work through teleconferencing. So it was a great team effort, and I think we have a lot of new experience now with which to apply potentially some telecommuting protocols long term, which I think is great for employees as well, and I really just look forward to evaluating what we learned in this experiment and applying the best of it to make our operations even more efficient and more user-friendly and increase public access and improve employee morale all at the same time. So thank you, Steve, for your leadership during this time, and I missed you guys. It's good to be back in person with everybody.
Commissioner Christman.
Well, I'm not going to take the time to state again what you two have pretty well already covered, but I just want to say that I totally do agree. Our staff has been phenomenal. We've accomplished a lot of important work during the time, you know, in new and innovative ways. To Julie's point about the NARUC group and other regulatory bodies across the nation, which a lot of people don't follow those like we do, but apparently even worse, some have coined the phrase the North Dakota model, as they have kind of copied us, or at least in large part copied us, in finding ways to get the important work done during a situation like this. So a lot to be proud of here, and you've commended our staff, and that's well deserved to them. But I'll just also want to thank you for your leadership, Mr. Chairman, and helping bring it all together.
Oh, thank you very much, Commissioner. I appreciate that. I guess we can say, when you hear of the talk of restarting, we never stopped. we didn't miss a beat. So it was a good feeling to keep things moving. So,
if I might, the agenda before us today is evidence of that, because if we had stopped, we wouldn't have such a vigorous agenda of items to move forward with on our first meeting back. So I think that's a lot of evidence right there.
Absolutely. There are 16 items on consent and the previous minutes. I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, moving into the regular agenda, and I also received a slightly revised order on BK1, so I will explain that after I make the motion. However,
Mr. Chairman,
I don't know that the motion was included on my new paperwork.
Let's see. And this, is this the one you're looking
at? Here it is.
Okay. I have another question regarding the agenda.
Okay, would you like to address that now?
Maybe it would be good, because it was a matter that I thought was going to be moved from consent to regular.
That was my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that was.
But I don't have it on my regular agenda, and I see it still listed on the consent agenda.
Are you referring to the tolling?
I was referring to the construction inspection contracts, which is consent JF3.
Mr. Chairman, my agenda shows that having been
moved
to JF5 in the regular agenda.
Okay, then I'll just transfer it over. I must just have an outdated consent and regular agenda. So,
okay, so JF5 is going to be moved from
JF3 from consent is being moved to JF5 on regular agenda.
Yeah, my paperwork does show it as JF5, I believe.
Okay, maybe yours does too.
Inspection Ryan. Contract on Northern Divide.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, very good. We will.
Okay, sorry about that.
Consider that done.
No, that sooner.
That's good to have that clarified.
And then, Mr. Chairman, before we get in as far as to you making the motion, now you found it, but this is so new now. Is this urgent that this be done at this meeting, or would there be a problem with holding on? I just hate it when things are changed right at the last minute.
Right. I wasn't wild about it either, and given the fact that our next meeting is, Steve, is that correct? Our next regular meeting would be July 8th.
That sounds right, but let me verify that.
And to make this effective for June, I did ask that very question to Pat, and he indicated that it should be, you know, short of a special meeting. We could move it to admin discussion. We could go over there are more grammatical tweaks. I noticed something this morning on the verbiage. The numbers stayed the same with the exception of one correction on the very last sentence. We could certainly move it to admin, talk about the two changes, or clarification in language is a better way of putting it, and then we could vote on it at that point in time.
Well, based on your just this description, if it's that simple, I'm willing to just at least delve into it at this point, and you can explain it.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll give it. We'll go that route, but I agree. I wasn't excited to have the change at the last minute. But with that said, I move the commission adopt the order in Ottertail Power Company generation resource cost recovery rates, case number PU-20-91.
Second.
Okay. I'll go through the timeline first, and then I'll explain where the two changes were made. On March 2nd, 2020, Ottertail Power Company filed a change in its generation cost recovery rider or to its cost recovery rider tariff. We did issue a notice of opportunity for hearing on April 1st, 2020, and provided until May 11th, 2020 for written comments and hearing requests. We did not receive any. And as a result, in terms of the discussion, Otter Tail Power proposes a GCRR, Generation Cost Recovery Rider, factor of 6.041% of customers' customer bills to recover actual and forecasted costs through June 20th for the Astoria Station Natural Gas Plant project of approximately $6.184 million during the recovery period July 1, 2020. Otter Tail Power proposes a generation cost recovery rider factor, again, of 6.041% of customer bills to recover actual and forecasted costs through June 20th for the Astoria Station Natural Gas Plant project, again, of approximately $6.184 million. And that is the first change is stopping that sentence. And then to clarify in the second sentence, then the recovery period is from July 1st, 2020 through June 2021. And that was blended together on the previous order. And it just didn't make, it wasn't clear in terms of, it wasn't specific enough, in my opinion. So I asked for that. That tweak to be made to the order just to make it more specific and clear. The recovery period is from July 1st, 2020 through June 2021. As mentioned, the impact of the rate change on the bill for residential customers using 1,000 kilowatt hours per month is approximately $2.70 per month. So that, again, just to make it very clear and very specific what this is for. Staff did review the tariff and found it to be reasonable and complying with the tariff language. As a result, this order would approve Otter Tail Power Company's application for the GCRR tariff revisions and a GCRR factor of 6.041%, and that they would be approved. And that was the second change. That was an error. It was listed as, on the very last sentence, 2.547%. So that was an error, and that is the second change. So the first was making the first paragraph specific, and I felt it was a little vague, and the second was a correction to that percentage. Commissioner Fedorchak, questions on this?
Just one question. The reference to the Hoot Lake plant retirement was taken out also.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because the retirement costs aren't being recovered through this GCRR?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. That's a separate issue, so that was... That was
okay. So that was just a mistake. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. I don't have a problem with those changes.
Yeah, but that's a good point. This is a replacement project in part, part of the replacement for the Hoot Lake facility. That's 140 megawatt 1950s era coal facility that is fired by coal that comes in from the Powder River Basin. The Astoria Station is a 245-megawatt simple-cycle gas plant with a cost of approximately $158 million. And, again, that's to replace Hoot Lake, which is certainly an aging facility. It would require substantial upgrades to keep that plant in operation, and this was a less costly option for customers. And really... The part that differentiates Hoot Lake, for example, from our facilities is the added cost of having to move coal from the Powder River Basin, transport it, a significant cost, to the Fergus Falls location where Hoot Lake is situated, and that transportation cost in particular makes it very challenging for that facility.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, my second motion, I move the commission adopt the order in Northern States Power Company light emitting diode street lighting tariff and rates, case number PU-20-93.
Second.
And March 9th, 2020, Northern States Power Company, also known as Xcel Energy, filed changes to its outdoor lighting tariffs. NSP proposes tariff language updates and a new rate for a new municipal and customer-owned LED lighting service that it believes to be more economical than existing options and more economical in the sense that moving from halogen lighting to LED lighting. We did issue a notice of opportunity for hearing on April 15th, 2020. No response was received as a result of that. And the three factors that we are looking, the three issues are the proposed tariff revisions just and reasonable? Do the proposed rates comply with the tariff? And are the proposed rates just and reasonable? We did discuss this with the applicant on May 13th, 2020, during an informal hearing. And again, this is for existing segments of municipally owned lighting systems in the NSP network. And just a few quick tidbits on LED lighting. There are approximately, they use approximately 60% less energy than halogen lighting. The maintenance intervals in terms of replacing bulbs changes from every 3 to 5 years on the halogen side to between 10 and even up to 20 years on the LED side. And this is actually from Sioux Falls. I thought it was interesting. But they replaced 65 light fixtures with LED in a pilot project related to converting this over. And just on those 65 light fixtures, they believed they will realize a savings of approximately $4,000 per year, and then that will then pay for the transition to LED lighting in just under 5 years. So there's essentially a five-year payback, and then the lighting has a much longer life at that point in time. So I thought that was very compelling, and I believe the lights are also brighter as well. So from a security standpoint, you have neighborhoods that are lit in a better way, and then also the cost savings and energy savings as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'll just add a couple thoughts because I expressed some concerns during the informal, whenever that was. One of the things that I thought was good, they do mention in their filing that there will be a gradual replacement approach, because one of the concerns I always have with these efficiency projects is if you're just rushing into it to do it just for that, I think oftentimes it doesn't end up paying off. But if you do it as things need some work, or even as you're in the area, you know, maybe a couple of them need some work, so while you're in that area, you do the rest. I think that certainly enhances the potential benefit here. One concern that I do have, but it's small, but I think it's something that I want to delve into maybe in a future rate case, is to look at these as a 29-year payback. And I think the companies end up getting pretty good benefit from dragging this out over a long period of time with their recovery rates. And I don't believe that a lot of these fixtures are going to be 30-year assets or 29-year assets. They may last that long potentially, but oftentimes before 29 years is up, something else changes. The neighborhood changes. Someone hits the pole and it needs to be replaced. Who knows what? But in investigating it further with staff, These have been kind of bunched in with poles and some other assets where 29 years probably is the right time frame. This isn't the large part of that grouping. And so I think it's certainly reasonable at this point, but something that we can maybe explore a little more in a rate case at some point.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, the next two motions are very similar, BK3 and BK4, so I'll explain BK3 in a little bit of detail, and then the same would apply to BK4. But starting with BK3, believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest, and finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate these cases for hearing under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-04-04 and issue a notice of opportunity for consolidated hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, Deferred Accounting Electric COVID-19 Application Case Number PU-20-191 and Montana Dakota Utilities Company, Deferred Accounting Gas COVID-19 Application Case Number PU-20-219.
Second.
Essentially what we're doing, this ties back to a filing on April 24th, 2020, that Montana Dakota Utilities Company, again, did file with the commission. It was an application requesting authorization for deferred counting for electric service and also for natural gas service to track financial effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. Approval would allow the utility to track and defer these financial impacts as a regulatory asset and affords possible recovery in future utility rates. The issue to be considered in these proceedings would be whether the commission should grant deferred accounting treatment for the financial impacts of COVID-19 pandemic. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by July 11th, 2020. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. And for more information, you can contact individuals, contact the Public Service Commission at 701-328-2400. We had a similar motion that we did approve, but it was just for the electric side and for the purposes of streamlining the process and to make it more efficient, since whether it's electric or gas, we're talking about the same issues essentially in terms of the COVID-19 impact. So it just brings them together. I think it will save time on for all parties involved. And the public, again, has every opportunity to weigh in if they so choose. And we don't know, frankly. This isn't an assurance of any recovery. For that matter, it's possible recovery. We'll have to review the costs, scrutinize them, and make a decision at the time if there are substantial costs that were that we, you know, choose to deem appropriate in terms of granting recovery. But we have time to look at those. We'll get through the process. And I do look forward to when we meet. The one thing I haven't clarified, I believe we scheduled these at the end of July. But I don't know that we scheduled them to be consolidated with the gas application as well. So we'll have to double check that from a scheduling standpoint if this in fact is approved. So we'll have to get through that first.
Mr. Chairman, I think I recall we scheduled informals, not formal hearings. So
that's my recollection as well. Mm-hmm.
That's correct. That's right.
I don't
yes.
know that we have to do anything to adjust that since it's informal. We could still schedule formal hearings if somebody requests them, obviously, though.
Right, right. But no, you're correct. Thank you for clarifying and correcting me that we would be conducting informals on these. And that's how we have them scheduled at this time.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
All right, and BK4, believing there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest in finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate these cases for hearing under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-04-04 and issue a notice of opportunity for consolidated hearing in Northern States Power Company Deferred Accounting Electric COVID-19 application case number PU-20-192 and Northern States Power Company Deferred Accounting Gas COVID-19 application case number PU-20-220.
Second.
Okay, and the same, everything is exactly the same. The application was received on April 24th, 2020, and the same issues will be considered. It would be the same deadline in terms of anyone interested to comment on the application in writing, or anyone desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and reasons for requesting a hearing. And again, that would have to be received by July 11th, 2020.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, and that concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, I move the Commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Belfouche Pipeline Company 8-inch Wilson Bowline Pipeline Conversion Project Siting Application, case number PU-18-404.
Second.
So this is an issue on it's a compliance issue. Belfouche Pipeline Company has a pipeline, a 20-mile-long, 8-inch existing crude oil line in McKenzie County. It was converted to a crude oil transmission line. They also have a couple other lines that were operating as gathering lines. And in the process of some discussions about conversion, working to convert those lines to transmission lines, it became there was a delay in making the conversion and carrying through with the requirements to convert those lines and go through the permitting process. So really, this consent agreement calls for Belfouche Pipeline Company to pay a penalty of $10,000 and Bridger Pipeline Company to pay a penalty of $20,000 to basically resolve these compliance issues. The law distinguishes between gathering and transmission lines and requires permitting prior to operating a line as a transmission line. And so our staff did have conversations with this company to explain that, and then there was just a delay in them completing that process. So the company has now completed the compliance for all of the lines in this area. They are using that infrastructure as efficiently as possible, operating both in the gathering and transmission capacity. And this consent agreement really addresses their noncompliance in a fair manner and puts this issue to bed. So I thank our staff and the company for working this out without additional delays and without any additional legal battles. I think this is a fair agreement and recognizes the requirements under the law to have the proper permitting in place prior to functioning as a transmission line, acknowledges that the company didn't have those in place in a couple instances, and pays a fair penalty for those infractions and is now in compliance and operating efficiently. So I appreciate this consent agreement and all the effort between the parties to come to terms with it and reach this agreement.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I will say this surprised me a little bit. I mean, we've known from staff that they were working on trying to reach a settlement. I was expecting a smaller penalty provision.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the part of the problem that revolved around the storage tanks for truck dumping, which wouldn't have been a violation as long as only oil went in there that was dumped out of a truck and then on down the through what would have still been a gathering line. But when they hooked that in with another gathering line, they didn't expand the tank capacity any and still used it for truck dumping. But being a fungible asset, yes, oil from the pipeline could go into there, thus being storage and making it a transmission line. But to me, that's kind of a technical. It's true, but there, that's not the extent of the violation either. But anyway, just the whole thing together, I thought this penalty provision seemed high. I would have certainly entertained a lesser amount, but I do think that a penalty is in order.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to throw that out there. I don't know if others think, too, that this is a little high, that perhaps it ought to be adjusted.
I
would only be suggesting an arbitrary number if I suggested a number. It just seemed high to me.
The one clarification I would make is my understanding is that there was volumes shifted off of the Four Bears line, which is a transmission line, into the storage, and then in some cases, and then moved into the gathering lines after that.
Perhaps that explains.
And so that is a slight distinction. I'm not opposed to entertaining a slightly lower penalty on the $20,000 penalty, but there was a pretty significant delay in the timing. I mean, they had a year and a half where they didn't do anything, and they knew from staff that there was permit change required for the conversion. So I think it recognizes that delay, that they knew about it, there was conversations, and then there was this significant delay, and they really didn't have any explanation during the hearing process for why it took that long to make the conversion. I mean, quite honestly, the law would require them to stop operating the line entirely, make the conversion, and then start again. And so they just kind of went forward business as usual and then did the permitting when they got around to it. And I understand that they view that the line operates the same regardless of whether it's a transmission or a gathering. If they want to make that case to the legislature to change the law, then I think they can do that. But that's not how the law reads. And so I think we're kind of, we've provided some flexibility to them in some of their operations and moved through some permitting in an urgent manner this spring in order to allow them maximum flexibility, recognizing some of their difficulties from a marketing standpoint, et cetera. And so I feel like this is, you know, not out of lines. It's certainly as high as I'd want it to be. But I don't think it's unreasonable.
I think the amount is appropriate, given the circumstances, and also the fact that companies bear the responsibility when they're operating in the state of North Dakota to understand the rules and regulations that are in place. And whether or not it's a technicality or not, a technicality is still ties back to how laws are written. And I think it sends the right type of message to industry that know the laws, know the rules, and make sure you're conducting business appropriately and getting permits as necessary. So I'm comfortable with the way the penalty amounts are outlined.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. The second motion I have today, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Northern Divide Wind LLC, 200 megawatt Northern Divide Wind Energy Center, Burke Siting Application, case number PU-19-376, and Northern Divide Wind LLC, 345 kV transmission line, Burke and Montreal Siting Application, case number PU-19-377.
Second.
This is a very extensive order, and I'm not going to go through it line by line or even page by page. I'm going to try and hit some of the high points of this order and some of the key areas that I think are worth bringing forward as it relates to this application. So on December 5th of 2019, Northern Divide Wind filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility for a 200 megawatt wind energy conversion facility known as Northern Divide Wind Energy, located in Burke County, and an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for a 41-mile-long, 345 kV electric transmission line and associated facilities to be located in Burke and Montreal counties in North Dakota. This is a revised project formerly called Burke Wind, which is an application that we received and denied for reasons outlined in an order on June 12th of 2019. The commission scheduled a consolidated public hearing for April 17th of this year to be held in Bowbells, after which in March the governor declared a state of emergency in response to the COVID-19 and issued several executive orders, one suspending the physical location requirements for meetings held by governing bodies attending via remote means, and also an executive order suspending the requirement that the commission hold public hearings on permit applications in specific locations. That opened up the door for us to convert the April 17th public hearing that was to be held in Bowbells to a remote means, and we held that hearing as planned on April 17th and received testimony, filings, and evidence, both in writing in quote-unquote person that day via electronic means. We did have pretty vigorous participation in that and had, I think it was 12 or so folks, maybe it was 14, a comment publicly on the project during that hearing. So this wind project consists of 74 wind turbines and four alternate locations and will have a nameplate capacity of up to 200 megawatts. The Northern Divide has a 30-year power purchase agreement that they've signed with Basin for the full output of the energy produced by the wind project. They have all the easements, agreements, and options necessary for siting and construction of the wind project and associated facilities. And the estimated total cost to construct the wind project is approximately $300 million. Regarding the transmission line, they also have all the easements, agreements, and options necessary for the siting construction of the transmission line. This estimated total cost of the transmission project is about $30 million. Regarding the studies, Northern Divide evaluated the wind project's potential impact on various environmental factors and filed numerous reports in support of its application. They also embarked on extensive consultation with North Dakota Game and Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Agency. The record includes a lot of all of the studies, obviously, and a lot of the back and forth between the various wildlife agencies regarding this project. And I'm going to focus in on this the most intently because the wildlife impacts, the wetland impacts and the associated wildlife impacts were the crux of the reason for denying the Burke Wind project. So they have, in throughout the process of the back and forth with North Dakota Game and Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, a number of adjustments were made to the Burke Wind project and included into the Northern Divide Wind project as it was filed in our office in December. And I'm going to highlight those changes. First of all, the project area was reduced by 52% from almost 23,000 acres to just about 11,000 acres in the current application for Northern Divide Wind. The impacts to the wetland features also were significantly reduced. The acres involved in wetlands went from 3,000 acres to about 1,000 acres for a reduction of 65%. The number of wetland features dropped from nearly 2,500 to 950, another 62% decrease in terms of the wetland features in the project area. Wetland features within a half a mile of the turbines, which has an impact on the wildlife living in those wetlands. Those acres impacted in that way went from 3,600 to 1,200, a decrease of 66%. Breeding waterfowl pair estimated displacement went from just about 1,000 to just about 500 for about a 51% decrease. Breeding waterfowl pair estimated habitat offset went from 400 to 200, another 51% or 50% or so decrease. Another area of significant change was the impact to unbroken grasslands, which was a big piece of the last and the controversy of the last Burke Wind project. Unbroken grassland in the project area, the acres impacted was about 4,800 in the Burke Wind project. That dropped to about 750 acres in the Northern Divide for an 84% decrease. And the percent of the project area that is unbroken grassland dropped from 21% to 7% for a 67% decrease. The unbroken grassland impacts, permanent impacts, were went from 6 acres to 0 acres for a 100% decrease in the new application. The unbroken grassland within 300 meters of turbines, which again was a significant impact on the wildlife habitat, went from 751 acres to about 188 acres for a 75% decrease, and also an associated estimated displacement of grassland birds dropped by also 75%. I just want to read from the letter that was provided, the final letter from North Dakota Game and Fish. As you may recall, in the original project, North Dakota Game and Fish stated both at the beginning and the end of the consultation that if Northern, that Burke Wind couldn't have picked a worse place in North Dakota to put a wind farm. And that played a key role in my ultimate decision for denying that application, in addition to the significant impacts, direct impacts to the wildlife, the native prairie, and the wetlands. The final letter provided by North Dakota Game and Fish on this project, here's some of the key points from that letter. Your company initiated heightened coordination and collaboration with the department on July 8th of 2019 to develop a more responsibly sited project. Northern Divide Wind Energy was created. Northern Divide Wind has taken several positive steps to reduce and defray the impact of the North Dakota Northern Divide Wind Energy project, such as shifting the project boundary, decreasing the project area by approximately 50%. As recommended, Northern Divide has relocated 44 and removed 3 of the original 81 turbines. All turbines have been moved away from key northern pintail breeding habitat, and most importantly, all have been located off and away from unbroken grassland sites. Through these efforts, the potential impacts to important wildlife resources resulting from the new layout are considerably reduced as compared to the original Burke Wind Energy Center. We appreciate Northern Divide Wind's efforts to listen and address the department's concerns. Those efforts demonstrate your commitment to pursue more responsibly sited development on this project and in the future. So that sort of summarizes the the changes and the impacts to the wildlife and biological resources. Shifting over to the cultural resources, they also had considerable consultation with the State Historic Preservation Office. The SHPO has concurred with the determination of no historic properties affected for this project, provided it takes place in the location and the manner described in the documentation. That's as it relates to the transmission line. And as it relates to the Wind Energy Center, there was a fair amount of given back and forth on that. And the final letter from SHPO's said that permitted Northern Divide Wind to move forward in light of the proposed mitigation plans with respect to the Nielsen Foresighted Barn and South St. Olaf's Church. There were some commitments made to some mitigation in that regard. So SHPO, after those commitments were made, SHPO was comfortable with the project. This was a project where LIUNA intervened and requested some specific reporting mechanisms for the hiring of local labor force for energy conversion facilities. We all recognize the value of hiring local, but also recognize that special labor will be required for certain components of the wind farm development. It's likely that those will need to be imported from other areas of the state or other states. Let's see here. Okay, so I think those really, that really summarizes the highlights of the projects. I really mostly wanted to address the ways in which this project had been altered and changed to address all of the concerns identified in the Burke Wind project and the conclusions of the wildlife agencies after those changes were made. So with all of that, we did have a lot of input in the project. I would say that all in all, there was probably equal amount of pro people for versus against. A lot of the folks who were against the project were pointed to the wildlife impacts, but they also, there was a fair number who just didn't like the visual impact of the project and that sort of thing. And the people who were for it pointed to landowner rights, the important economic impacts that the project will have, pointed to the need to have supplemental income to support the farming community and the economic development impacts of the project itself. So all in all, I think that the company did what it needed to do, in my estimation, to reach the threshold of minimal impact required under the law to receive a siting permit. And I'm prepared to support this project today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none.
I just want to throw in that I continue to believe that our country is oversaturating our electric grid with intermittent energy at the expense of baseload energy. But this is a siting case, and we have to decide it based on the law in North Dakota Siting Act, and as it's written by the legislature. And as far as I can see, this project meets all the requirements of the Siting Act. So I agree with your recommendation.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve and colleagues. My third motion, I move the commission adopt the order in Endeavor Field Services LLC Skunk Hill Station to Belfield Oil Terminal siting application case number PU-20-161.
Second.
Let's see. On October 19th of 2011, the commission provided a permit for an approximately 6.8 mile, 8-inch crude oil pipeline from the Belfield Oil Terminal in Stark County to the Skunk Hill Pipeline Station operated by Bridger Pipeline LLC in Billings County. In 2017, we went through the process to transfer that certificate to QEP Field Services LLC. And then again in 2018, that certificate was transferred to Endeavor Field Services LLC, which was a successor to QEP Field Services. And then on March 30th of this year, Endeavor filed with the commission a consolidated application to amend the order to allow them to reverse the flow of crude oil in the pipeline, receiving oil at the interconnection with Bridger Pipeline's Skunk Hill Station and transporting it south to Belfield Oil Terminal. This is case number PU-20-161, which we're acting on. We did a notice of opportunity for hearing. No requests for a hearing were received. In the process, Endeavor proposes to reverse the flow. As I stated earlier, the pipeline is completed. There will be no further disturbance through additional construction and activity with respect to the reverse of the flow of the crude oil in the pipeline. So this is all the steps have been performed necessary to approve this operational change, and I'm again prepared to support this today. And I do want to, one of the items I want to add to discussion is this, under what part of our permitting is, do they have to come to us to ask for permission to make these kind of operational changes? And maybe we need to set up a work session on that, but it strikes me as being a lot of paperwork for, I don't know how much real technical review we do on these sorts of things or what is necessary. And so I'd like to just have that discussion and see if, you know, we can't maybe streamline this particular process down the road.
I like that idea. Agree.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Thank you. And my final order is another transfer of certificates. On December 30th of 2013, the commission issued a certificate of corridor compatibility for the 6-inch and 8-inch pipelines for between Dakota Prairie Refinery and Lario Shipping LLC. Now the Dakota Prairie and BOE South want to have filed this application to transfer this certificate to Dakota Prairie. Let's see. We issued a notice of opportunity for hearing this that provided until May 15th. No comments or requests for a hearing were received. The affidavit of Richard Hastings, general manager of Dakota Prairie Refining, indicates that they are agree to assume the rights and obligations of LARIO with respect to the certificate and the route permits, including any conditions, limitations, rights, and obligations set forth in the order and any other conditions or modifications set forth in subsequent orders of the Commission with respect to the certificate and route permits. So with that in place, this transfer certificate is ready to go.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, and let's see here. This one I need to... We've got some stuff confusing me here. Okay, my final motion is JF5. I move the Commission execute construction inspection contracts PU 833-20 and PU 834-20 with K2 Engineers and Consultants Incorporated in Northern Divide Wind LLC, 200 megawatt Northern Divide Wind Energy Center, Burke Siting Application Case Number PU-19-376, and Northern Divide Wind LLC, 345 kV Transmission Line, Burke and Montrell Siting Application Case Number PU-19-377.
Second.
This is just a construction inspection contract for the project that we previously approved, Northern Divide Wind, for the construction of the Wind Energy Center and the transmission line. These third-party construction inspectors go out on site. They watch over the company during its construction and make sure that they're doing things as required under the permit and in our order. And so doing this today puts all the pieces in place for that project to move forward whenever they are ready.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Christman.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. After having a bunch last meeting, I only have one today. I move the Commission execute a contract with Danhart Patrol Service, LLC, of Upton, Wyoming, in the amount of $321,478.30 for construction services for the 2020 Hedinger and Stark Counties AML project, case number AM-20-180.
Second.
In early March, the AML division issued an invitation for bid for the 2020 Hedinger and Stark Counties AML project. The project involves the elimination of dangerous high walls at four old abandoned surface mines in Hedinger and Stark Counties. For those who might be listening who aren't familiar, that's out kind of in Dickinson, south of Dickinson area. About 186,700 cubic yards of spoil material will be used to backfill the high walls, and about 30 acres will be reclaimed at the four sites combined. Competitive sealed bidding procedures were used with notices issued to registered vendors through the State Procurement Office. The public bid opening was held on April 23rd, and on this one we had eight different bids. The low bid was Danhart Patrol Services of Upton, Wyoming, and that's for this amount, $321,478.30. The other seven bids ranged from just over $350,000 to just over $840,000, and the AML division's cost estimate for the project was $399,665. So this is coming in almost 70,000 under what we anticipated. If you recall from the previous round, one or both of those projects were a little over what we anticipated. And I said at the time we had enough money in the program for all of our projects this year. This is part of the reason why that this one is less. So on May 19th, the contract was sent to Danhart Patrol Service to sign. That has been returned. We've received performance and payment bonds, a certificate of liability insurance, and all the requested other materials.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
It's more of a question, and I don't know if you can answer it or not, but significant, you know, 187,000 cubic yards of spoil material. Is that existing spoil piles that are in the same area that were just left way back when, or...
Yeah, and I don't know if they're all necessarily, you know, what you might think of in spoil piles, like you see at some of the little bit newer mines, that, like by Wilton and Beulah and Garrison, but it's stuff that never really was reclaimed, and so it's not good productive farmland, at least, and so it's really considered spoil material because the old overburden and stuff is mixed in with what was on top back in those days.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, that's my only motion, but I did want to point out, and some time ago I kind of resolved to try to do this. We use these commission meeting dates when we sign all these orders at the end, also to a convenient time for the reclamation department to get our signatures on like notices of renewal and revision applications at the mines. If you recall, there was a question one time of what was that we just signed, and we have one of those today for a renewal at Coteau. And so that's in the packet, and so we don't need to take an action on it. It's just there. It's a public notice and opportunity offering. And in the case of reclamation, we don't need to take action on them, but we do need to sign them, so that'll be in the packet.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Christman. Do we have anyone on the bridge line? We do. Okay. So we will now take a brief, well, in terms of announcements, our next regular commission meeting, I will point out, is Wednesday, July 8th at 10 a.m. And let's see, and then today we have, do I have my calendar right? The informal at 1:30 this afternoon. And that would be for Quest Corporation, so that is at 1:30 today. I know we will be here in the commission hearing room. I don't know if Quest is coming in or if they're going to be dialing in remotely, I'm assuming, dialing in.
I believe they will be appearing remotely, Mr. Chairman.
Appearing remotely. Okay. All right, perfect. So that's at 1:30 today. And again, Wednesday, July 8th is our next regular commission meeting. We will now take a brief recess to take any questions from the press that may